comes down in Texas. Welcome, America. Welcome, Truth Seekers, to the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, with you all night long here as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. Finally, with something to be thankful for. We'll get to that in a moment. Broadcasting tonight all night long from the left coast here in beautiful downtown Burbank at the studios of K-Talk AM 1150. Delighted to be here. Delighted to have you with us here. We got a big show. Of course, that's all. It's all been skewed about now at the last minute with this breaking news out of Texas. Oh, the hammer comes down. But we'll get to that in a moment. 877-520-1150 will be our number tonight if you want to reach the show at any time. We'll try to get through to you. We'll have our third hour completely open, so you'll be able to get in with anything you want, anything you feel thankful for, and there's finally something to be thankful for. Ain't there? Yeah, there is. A little bit, anyway. Also, coming up in this hour, Andy Worthington will be joining us from across the pond to talk about, remember that? There was this president, Obama, I think it was. He came into office, and one of the first things he did was he said, "We're going to shut down Gitmo, baby. Shutting down Guantanamo." Well, whatever happened to that 2 years on at this point? We're going to talk to the one guy in the world, really, who I believe knows more about Gitmo, at least more about the politics of Gitmo and the people who are being held year after year after year, still being held there without charges, without trial, without nothing. That's Andy Worthington. He's going to join us as the author of the Guantanamo Files. And we'll talk about the recent trial, the Ahmed Gilani trial, and what that means to the future of, man, the rule of law in this country, the Constitution, habeas corpus, you know, American values, things that those folks on the right used to give a damn about. We're also going to be talking to some folks out of Florida. Susan Pinchon and Derek Brett are going to be joining us a little bit later to talk about an extraordinary lawsuit, an extraordinary election contest that was filed yesterday, has not been discussed anywhere. I think it's an extraordinary lawsuit that raises some very serious questions, not just about the Diebold voting system that was used down there, but some serious election fraud, or at least something that looks a whole hell of a lot like it. You want to join us in the chat room, by the way, because all night long we got some great chatters hanging out in the special BradBlog.com chat room that is set up. If you want to come on by and say hello, it's live during the show. While we're live, the chat is live, and there's a lot of great folks from the regular Malloy chat room that have been coming on by. So come on by. Say hello to Desi Doyen, our moderator tonight, our producer, our call screener, and the guest host to the guest host, just in case I pass out, as I am still fighting this cold. So my apologies for that. You can also Twitter us throughout the night. Sounds kind of hot, doesn't it? something the TSA might offer. You can Twitter us all night long. Enhanced Twittering to the Brad Blog. If you want to say hello, we would love to see from you there. What other business do I have before I get on to that? All right, enough for that throat clearing. Jury convicts Tom DeLay in money laundering case. Yes, Tom DeLay, the former U.S. House Majority Leader, has been found guilty on all charges. This comes from the Austin Statesman just minutes after the verdict broke about an hour or two ago tonight as we went to air. Tom DeLay, the former U.S. House Majority Leader, whose name became synonymous with the Republicans' controversial rise to power in the Texas House, was found guilty today of laundering money in connection with the 2002 elections. Juror sent a note on yellow legal paper that a verdict had been reached to the judge at 4:46 p.m. Texas time. They had been deliberating since Monday afternoon, about 19 hours worth of deliberation, by the way. They sent word that they had reached their verdict, and DeLay was then charged with money laundering and conspiracy to commit money laundering. He now faces a possible sentence of 5 to 99 years in prison. Oh, and a maximum $10,000 fine on the money laundering charge. So the hammer seems to be going down. 5 to 99 years on the money laundering charge, and 2 to 20 years in prison, and a possible $10,000 fine for the conspiracy charge. So we're looking at possible life in prison for Republican Tom DeLay, former U.S. House Majority Leader. Prosecutors earlier said they believe the DeLay case is the first such criminal charge ever filed over Texas's century-old prohibition on corporate contributions in state political races. He was nicknamed the Hammer because of his heavy-handed style, was accused of conspiring to funnel $190,000 of corporate money. Really? How quaint. $190,000 of corporate money through the Republican National Committee, which then sent $190,000 in campaign donations to 7 GOP candidates for the Texas House. Because you see, in Texas, of all places, they're going to have to get rid of this law. This will not do in the age of Citizens United. But in Texas, state law prohibits corporations from giving donations to candidates directly or indirectly. And that's what the jury in Texas decided, that these were indirect, at least, contributions being funneled through the RNC, $190,000 worth of corporate money that then went to Tom DeLay's favorite candidates. Now, interesting that this comes up today, following just a few months after the Citizens United decision, when which opened the floodgates on corporate money into elections. Our friend Marcy Wheeler over on the Twitters asks, here's an honest question, she writes, just a few moments ago before we went on air. After Citizens United, would Tom DeLay's money laundering have been legal or just unnecessary? Good question. I think it certainly would have been unnecessary. At this point, I think we'll be figuring this out in the days ahead, because I don't know if you can, even with Citizens United, if the Texas state law would allow the contributions of corporate money. That's been the law for 100 years in Texas. In Texas, of all places. As I said, that's not going to do. They're going to have to get rid of that. That's for sure. you know what? Something to be thankful for here. As we head into Thanksgiving, Tom DeLay said, quote, "This is an abuse of power." And nobody knows abuses of power better than Tom DeLay. "It's a miscarriage of justice," says Tom DeLay. "And I still maintain that I am innocent. The criminalization of politics undermines our very system. And I'm very disappointed in the outcome." Yeah, I guess you are. Interesting turn of phrase there. The criminalization of politics. Well, there's a couple of different ways that one could take that, ain't there? But I think what's happened here is, without a doubt, the corporatization of politics has certainly undermined our very system. Tom DeLay may have been ahead of the curve in undermining our system with corporate money. But, at least he is, for the moment, being held accountable. We'll see if that stands. We'll see if he finds a way to wriggle out of it, as these guys seem to be able to do. I'm sure he's got friends on the Supreme Court who would love to say, no, no, no. Corporations are people. They can give as much money as they want. You must let poor dear Tom DeLay go. Accountability. We're going to talk about much more of that straight ahead with Andy Worthington. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us. London Calling could mean only one thing. Our friend Andy Worthington will be joining us from across the pond presently. We will certainly have more on Tom DeLay later in this broadcast, and we want to get your opinions on it. We're going to talk about that later in the show. But for now, you know, there's an advertisement running on MSNBC that I absolutely love. It's an ad for Rachel Maddow's show. And she speaks the following line. She says, "We begin tonight with a story that no one is talking about." I love that line, man. That's what we do at bradblog.com. We cover the stuff that really, you know what, no one else does. And there's a man who is doing exactly that, who has been doing that now for a whole bunch of years, where nobody else has been covering with such detail and staying focused on this, tirelessly covering the story, the tragedy, the disaster, frankly, of what has come of the prison at Guantanamo Bay, and frankly, the disaster that has come of the U.S.'s once great record for civil rights in this country and in this world. So freelance journalist and historian Andy Worthington joins us. He's a regular contributor to the U.K.'s Guardian, the Daily Star Lebanon, the Huffington Post, AndyWar.com, Alternet, everywhere else. Author of The Guantanamo Files, the story of the 759 detainees in America's illegal prison. And one hell of a blogger and a reporter. And boy, there's a lot I want to talk to him about tonight. Andy Worthington, sir, welcome again to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hello, Brad. How are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. I think it was actually a year ago. So it's our holiday meeting with Andy Worthington.
Yeah, right.
As the years go by, and gosh, not much has changed in that year, has it, Andy?
No, not much has changed in the last year, actually, Brad, I'm sad to say.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. And before we get into some of these details here, just because this is one of those stories that no one is covering, how many people are we still looking at who are still sitting there in Guantanamo Bay who have, you know, yet to face charges, much less trials or military tribunals at this point?
It's 174, man.
And that was, in looking for a bright side to start us out here, how many were actually there when Barack Obama came into office?
About 240.
So he's been able to dispatch about 70 of them in these 2 years, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Which is amazing, and which is what drew me to, this piece that you wrote, and doggone it if I don't have the title right in front of me, but it was basically talking about, we linked to it at bradblog.com, and I'll give your website in a minute, but you put this great framework on the Obama presidency to date, talking about the national securities, the two Americas that we're now looking at when it comes to national security issues. We've got just a few minutes before the break. So before we get there, let's talk about the first America. Let's talk about the promise that Barack Obama brought to office and what he did, and then we'll talk after the break about how things changed.
Yeah, okay. Well, sure. You know, the first one was the, you know, I'm sure people remember. He came in, he promised on the first day to suspend the military commissions. Those are the trials for terrorists that had been kind of brought back from the dead by Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, much criticized. And then on the second day, he signed these executive orders promising to close Guantanamo within a year, to uphold the absolute ban on torture. You know, and it all looked very promising. And then kind of nothing really happened for several months. And then there was a whole load of issues that went on, and I mean, there was some important stuff that happened. You know, in response to a court case, the president released what are known as the torture memos.
Mm-hmm.
One of these had been leaked before. It was the one in which John Yoo had attempted to redefine torture. The companion memo to that, describing exactly what could be done, apparently legally now, to Abu Zubaydah, the high-value detainee, was released, as were some other damning documents produced by the Office of Legal Counsel in the Justice Department in 2005, still maintaining this this outrageous position that torture wasn't torture, and spelling out in this horribly clinical detail the kind of things that, according to these lawyers, you could and couldn't do to people. And now that caused a big backlash. And it was around that time, I think, that the whole project to close Guantanamo and to deal in a responsible manner with this dreadful legacy of the Bush administration kind of started to unravel, really.
And it was near, I think it was near, and I know, I think the point you're getting to here in a moment is the photographs of the torture that were to be released, at least we were told as much. But then right around there, Andy Worthington, something changed, and that almost seems to be a turning point in this story. And I want to pick up that turning point. We'll have a big, long block after this break. We're speaking with Andy Worthington, journalist and historian, about Gitmo. What came of it? He's staying up late for us tonight out there in the UK, which we greatly appreciate. So much more with Andy Worthington straight ahead, and the two Americas of Barack Obama's world. Much more. Brad in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead. To the Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight and the rest of the week, although tomorrow there will be a best of Mike Malloy for Thanksgiving, and then he'll be back live with you on Cyber Monday. But you got me tonight, and I'm speaking with Andy Worthington, a British journalist, historian, and frankly expert on everything that is Guantanamo Bay and what it means not just to the U.S. but to the world. And he's staying up late for us tonight over in the UK, and we're talking about one of his recent articles, which I now have the title for, On Guantanamo, Obama Hits Rock Bottom. We were talking about the somewhat cheerier part before we went to the break, of the two Americas that we're looking at under concerning national security issues under Barack Obama. And that first America, as Andy tells us, reminds us, really, of the hope when Obama came into office, suspended the military commissions, gave executive orders to close Gitmo to end torture, released the torture memos. And we were almost to turn the page, I think, to the other America as we were getting to the torture photos that were to be released as promised by Barack Obama. But then something happened. So, Andy, let's pick up the story right there.
Well, sure. I mean, these were the photos that were going to be released of abuse in Iraq and also in Afghanistan. And it was another court case. And you know, he was getting so much flack at that point that he basically said, right, we're not going to take this any further, and refused to release them. And it was around that time that really things absolutely started to change. He did a speech on national security in the National Archives, where essentially everything that had been on the table under the Bush administration was brought back onto the table.
Mm-hmm.
So military commissions were back, you know, and that's a pretty deadly idea, really, when federal courts have an excellent track record of prosecuting terrorists, the criminals. It would have broken the whole kind of war on terror nonsense that, you know, terrorists are warriors. They're not, they're criminals. It would have enabled the focus to remain solely on federal court trials. By reintroducing the military commissions, you know, it's kind of enabled the people who want military commissions to go ahead and to have all that extra energy to put into that.
And you'll pardon me, because I have to clarify this for folks here in the U.S. who have been fed so much misinformation. So I have to clarify that, in fact, hundreds and hundreds, I think something like 900-something terror trials have been carried out in civilian court, carried out successfully to conviction. And so, you know, this notion that, you know, we can't even try these people in civilian court is just absurd based on the evidence that we actually have. So pardon me for breaking in there to just reiterate that so people actually understand that point.
Well, no, absolutely, Brad. I mean, it's a very important point. You're right. It's hundreds and hundreds of cases, and not just before the Bush administration, but throughout the Bush administration's time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Successful prosecutions of terrorists in federal court trials. Some of those guys are sitting in supermax prisons as we speak.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why bring back the military commissions, which have been, you know, hobbled with criticism throughout their entire history? And in the few cases that they have managed to achieve results, they've always been subject to an enormous amount of criticism and have actually ended up delivering fairly poor results, even in terms of the sentences that have been handed down, with one exception. That was a man who refused to mount a defense in his own trial. So that didn't really look very good internationally, that he just sat mute for the whole week of his trial.
Mm-hmm.
But, the sentences in the other ones have been not really very significant. And it's really, it's ideological. The reason that people want the military commissions is they were sold on the idea that it was a war on terror, that these guys are warriors. They don't want them to be terrorists and criminals. They want them to be warriors, and they want it to be in a military context. But it's not working. I mean, it's a kind of ridiculous point to take, but it's, you know, what I mean, to be fair to President Obama, it's one of those things that has you know, led to so many of the difficulties that he's faced.
Well, and he came out and he basically said, and I think it was at the National Archives, when he, you know, basically said, well, we're going to try some of them in a court, we're going to try some of them in a military tribunal, and then some of them we're just going to hold forever, you know, as if that was some sort of a legitimate option. And now this, as things began to turn in this second America, and you know, he started going to court over national security issues. Secret. What the hell are they?
State secrets.
Thank you. State secrets privilege. This cold is getting the best of me. State secrets privilege. Repeating really all of these things that George Bush did, and it really turned. Do you, Andy, think, was there a turning point? Was there any one moment, any one event that turned this thing around from the hope that he did bring in, and he did take action when he came in, that did appear to be quite hopeful? Did one event happen, one moment, or was this just the politics grinding him down over a period of time?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about certain backstage things that may have been going on. I don't know whether there was pressure from the Pentagon, from the intelligence agencies, whether there was specific pressure from certain Republicans, you know, because he was trying to keep, he was aiming for this bipartisan consensus that's never even existed,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the hope of pushing his health care reforms. I mean, that dominated his first year. I haven't heard of whether there was anything in particular, but mm-hmm. it's clear that things turned, because Greg Craig, who was the White House counsel, who was the man who'd been particularly driving these things, you know, he had another plan at this time, which was to bring a couple of innocent guys who'd been wrongly imprisoned in Guantanamo. Everybody knew they were wrongly imprisoned. They were two of the Uyghurs. They're Muslims from China's Xinjiang province.
Right.
And the Bush administration had given up pretending they were enemy combatants. They'd won the first habeas corpus petition, and the judge had said, look, you know, these guys can't go back to China because they'll face the risk of torture. You haven't found anywhere to put them. I have now declared that they have won their habeas corpus petition. It's unconstitutional to hold them. Bring them to the U.S. mainland. Bring them to my court. I want these guys to come and live in the U.S. mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg Craig had realized, you know, not only was it a profound injustice what was being done to these guys, but he realized that it would help other countries to take cleared Guantanamo prisoners who couldn't be returned to their home countries if the United States did it first. I think that was a great and principled move, but mm-hmm. Obama put a halt to that around May 2009. So as part of this, you know, this change that took place, when he completely gave in on being bold, as was necessary, about some of these issues. And, you know, that's made it very difficult for these people in Guantanamo who shouldn't have been there but can't go home because they're from horrible, tyrannical regimes where, ironically, they will face torture if they're returned, you know, as though they've been in some hotel for the last few years.
And some of those include, because I think, as I said, it was around Christmas last year when I talked to you last, Andy, with the Christmas Day bomber who was a Nigerian, as I recall, but he trained in Yemeni, and therefore all of these Yemenis who were they to be released, or were they to be tried in Gitmo?
No, they were to be released.
Released?
There are nearly 60 men in Guantanamo that the task force that Obama convened, you know, this was government officials.
Right.
This was people from the agencies. They went through the cases. They said, look, you know, these guys can go back to Yemen. And they started that release just before Christmas, just before this bombing happened. They mm-hmm. released six guys back to Yemen. No problems. As soon as this happened, he just bowed to criticism when everybody went crazy and said, you know, essentially what they were saying, Brad, was, you know, we can't trust anyone in Yemen. The whole of Yemen is a terrorist nation. It's a bit of an insult to, you know, a nation of 20 million people. And it's an insult as well, I think, really, to these people in Guantanamo who've been there for 8 or 9 years, who, you know, a task force has said these guys can go home. And the president capitulates to criticism, establishes this moratorium on releasing any Yemenis, no Yemenis to be released. And that was nearly a year ago.
Yeah, and
there's no sign of when, if ever, this is going to be reversed.
Yeah, this is, you know, I need to underscore this. This guy, Abdul Muttalib, the Christmas Day bomber, he's a Nigerian. He tries to pull off this stunt, the underwear bomber. Because he trained in Yemeni, all of these Yemenis now who were to be released have to stay. And we're talking about how many in numbers, Andy?
We're talking about nearly 60 men.
60 men.
I mean, we're talking about a third of the people that are in Guantanamo.
Who, and now, did they commit any crime? Why were they going to be released to face trial elsewhere, or were they just found that there were no reason to bring charges against these people?
Yeah, no, they were going to be released back to Yemen. I mean, the government has always had issues about Yemen and about the security situation. The Bush administration permanently did. You know, there comes a point where you're going to have to release people and, you know, and trust that presumably in most of those cases it will be okay. I mean, another problem that we have really with Guantanamo, Brad, is that everything has been hyped up so much. But the fact is, you are going to release people, and a few of these people may be in a bit of a bad mood because of what happened to them.
Yeah,
there may
think?
Be people who were in a bad mood before you did what you did to them. Some of them might be in a bad mood because of what you did to them. And it's possible that some of them will... will take up arms,
right?
Let's say. You know, this has happened in some cases.
Yeah.
Not as many cases as the government has made out.
Right.
But on these issues, people want a recidivism rate of zero, whereas you look at the criminal justice system and it's something like 60-70%. You know, nothing like that has happened with Guantanamo. In contrast to the propaganda that's been pumped out by the Pentagon, there's actually only evidence for a very small number of people, 5% maybe, of all the people who've been released from Guantanamo having engaged in any kind of militant activity or terrorist activity afterwards.
Yeah,
it's actually a small number of people. And when you think what these guys have been through,
yeah.
you know?
If I were them, I would be pretty pissed off, too. Yeah, let me get to, because I got to get to a break shortly, but let me get to Ahmed Galani here, his trial, where, and of course, I'm sure you have noticed this in the U.S. media. Galani was tried on, what was it, 85 charges or something like
yeah.
that? And of course, if you follow the U.S. media, Galani walked. He walked. He skated. He got away. Now, of course, in fact, he was charged, found guilty on only one of those charges to commit conspiracy. This was in relation to the African embassy bombings in 1998. But you had an interesting point. That one charge, we should note, requires him to stay in jail for a minimum of 20 years. And the judge, if the judge likes, can give this guy life in prison. So this notion that he walked is just absolute and utter nonsense. But in fact, he did get away on a whole bunch of these charges. But here was something that you wrote, Andy Worthington, in your piece that caught my eye. You said Galani had been indicted for his part in the African embassy bombings in 1998, and three of his alleged co-conspirators had been successfully tried and convicted in federal court in May of 2001. Obviously, that's before 9/11. And then prior to receiving life sentences in October 2001. When we come back, because I do have to get to a break, Andy, I would like to find out why it is that his three alleged co-conspirators were so easily tried, why there was no problem there, but why Galani faced such a difficult time in civilian court. I'd like that answer from you, if I could. And I also want to get a picture of what the rest of the world is thinking, what they're looking at when they see the U.S. acting this way. That's a whole bunch to talk about, and we will do that with you after this short break. We're speaking with Andy Worthington, journalist and historian. You can check out his website at andyworthington.co.uk, and you can follow him. You should follow him on the Twitters at Guantanamo Andy. You can also get through to us, by the way, at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. More with Andy Worthington and me, Brad Friedman, here on the Mike Malloy Show right after this.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bar.
I'm giving you a piece of my mind. There's no talk of any kind.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Andy Worthington in our closing few minutes here this hour. Want to get a couple of pieces of important information from him, if I can. Okay, Ahmed Galani. There we go. I got him back. Ahmed Galani, who was found guilty of conspiracy involved with the African embassy bombings in 1998, just a few days ago, who will receive a minimum of 20 years in prison. His three co-conspirators, they were successfully tried and convicted in federal court before May of 2001, and they received life sentences in later that year. What was the difference, Andy Worthington, in the trial of his co-conspirators than what he faced, or was there a difference?
Well, you know, I suspect that what actually happened was that the jury wasn't convinced that Galani was anything more than a minor player. I mean, it all hinged on how much he knew. He was certainly involved in getting materials that were used, but it was never clear the extent to which he was actually kind of drawn into this and how much he was actually a part of it.
But was there information that... Oh, go ahead.
It seems to me that the jury, you know, essentially couldn't conclude that he was, you know, any significant player, and therefore, you know, kind of went for this much lesser role. But you know, there are other elements that were involved in it, of course, Brad, which is that, you know, I mean, actually, the guys who were convicted in 2001. this is particularly interesting, I think, were non-coercively interrogated
right.
by FBI, skilled FBI interrogators.
Mm-hmm.
In the days before, you know, we got a bunch of crackpots who thought, I'll tell you what we'll do torture. Despite the fact that it's illegal and counterproductive, let's do torture. That will show how tough we are.
And a lot of that, and I'm sorry to cut you off just because I'm, as usual, coming to the top of the hour, Andy. A lot of that that was taken from Galani had to be thrown out because it did come under torture, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there was a witness that he identified, but he identified while he was being tortured in a secret prison run by the CIA. So the judge threw it out. But the judge also had some doubts about whether this guy was reliable because he had doubts about the circumstances under which he himself had been interrogated after he'd been fingered by Gailani. So the whole thing's pretty much of a mess. But, you know, the torture fingerprint on it is pretty unpleasant. But I don't think that what it demonstrates is that it ruined the case, if you like. I mean, what it did was it was excluded, and they still managed to get a conviction that means this guy gets at least 20 years.
Right.
It's not a defeat in any kind of way. And if we're looking at federal court trials for any of the other Guantanamo prisoners who have also been subjected to torture, then it actually demonstrates, look, we can cut out this terrible torture story. We can proceed with the prosecution. We can kind of presume, actually, that if we have any real evidence, we're going to get a conviction. And if we could get this whole thing out of the way, we could turn our backs on the torture thing and look back on a terrible episode in American history and say, you know, we managed to do the cases. I don't think that addresses the outstanding question, Brad, of whether the people who authorized this should have been allowed to get away with it.
Yeah, and I fear it's a question that we're not going to see answered for some time in this country and in this world. I only have about, 20 seconds left, Andy. UK is also a signatory of the UN Convention Against Torture. Don't they have to bring war crime charges if we don't?
Well, the problem is that nobody can implement them. I mean, I do think that what's interesting is that, you know, after President Bush admitted in his book that he authorized waterboarding, he's now been advised by the Mayor of London, who's a Conservative, you know, probably to think twice about traveling in Europe to publicize his book, because there may be countries in Europe that won't take kindly to a torturer, a self-admitted torturer, coming and promoting his book in their country.
Andy Worthington. Check him out, andyworthington.co.uk. Thank you, my friend. Sorry I got to run. Brad on the
boy. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, brother. More ahead. Welcome back to hour number two of the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight on Thanksgiving Eve. It is 6 minutes after the hour. Glad you could join us here tonight. Our phone number is 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Just to close up, to put a cap on that last hour with Andy Worthington, and if you missed any portion of it, we will have it and the rest of the show up late night tonight at bradblog.com for your free archive perusal. That said, please support the Mike Malloy Show and run over to MikeMalloy.com and get yourself a podcast and help keep progressive radio on our public's airwaves. Please? Thank you. All right, to put a lid on that, though, in his story, Andy Worthington's story on Guantanamo, Obama hits rock bottom. He concludes, the silence of President Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder in response to complaints about trials in civilian courts is deeply troubling. The Obama administration needs to put down those who are insulting U.S. law through the prism of their own warped ideology, and there is no telling where the rot will stop. If senior officials believe in the ability of federal courts to try terror suspects, then they need to find the courage to say so boldly and with a courage that has been sadly lacking and to follow through on their beliefs without caving in to criticism from opponents whose entire point of view is fueled by blind vengeance and a thorough disdain for the law. I would also add that their entire point of view is fueled by a blind partisanship and a quest for power. And these are people, Republicans, for the most part, who will say and do anything at this point to destroy Barack Obama, no matter how it might destroy our own sense of self, our own constitution, and even our own national security. I can't remember who it was who said recently, but it's true, that at this point, the Republicans love power more than they love national security. And it is and will be to their eternal shame, as it will be, by the way, to Barack Obama's, unless he gets it. And gets it soon. All right, we're going to be joined momentarily to discuss an extraordinary case in Florida. An extraordinary case of what appears, sure as hell, appears to be fraud in a recent election down in Osceola County. I'll find out if I'm pronouncing that right. Osceola, I think. County, Florida. An amazing case. We're going to be joined by an election integrity advocate, Susan Pinchon, and the attorney on the case, Derek Brent. This was filed just yesterday, and it is, as Rachel Maddow likes to say, a story that no one is talking about, but we are. Before I get there, in some other election news out here in California today, Republican Steve Cooley, the L.A. County District Attorney, has finally conceded in his race to San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris. They were locked in a battle for State Attorney General to replace, in this case, it would replace Jerry Brown, who's moving back up to the governorship. This means, with Cooley's concession, that 9 out of 9 races in California, 9 out of 9 statewide races that were run on November 2nd were all won by Democrats. We got your teabaggers right here. What red tidal wave? What are you talking about? 9 out of 9 went to Democrats. Pretty amazing, bucking the rest of the country. That's one piece of news. The other, a recount is ordered in Minnesota. Oh, good news. Democracy rears its head once again in, frankly, the state that seems to love democracy, small d democracy, up in Minnesota. Minnesota's governor's race, the state canvassing board on Tuesday ordered that all 2.1 million ballots cast in the gubernatorial election be counted again by hand. Minneapolis Star Tribune is reporting that the board accepted a report by the Minnesota Secretary of State, that would be Mark Ritchie, which found that Democrat Mark Dayton is leading Republican Tom Emmer by just 8,770 votes. Because this is in the governor's race, because the difference is less than one half of one percentage point, it automatically triggers a recount. So the recount will start on Monday. I don't call it a recount. I call it a hand count, since it's the first time these paper ballots will actually be counted by human beings, for the most part, in each of the state's 87 counties, and they should be finished by December 7th. Emphasis on should, for those who remember Franken Coleman. These things can get dragged out. Such is democracy. And boy, oh boy, does I love it. And by the way, the folks in Minnesota should be very proud, extremely proud, to have their Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, perhaps certainly one of the best Secretaries of States in the country, after the 2008 Coleman-Franken hand count. They should be very proud, because that was, you know, it was about open transparency and public oversight. And Mark Ritchie delivered in spades, and there is no question who won that election by the end, and that is what democracy is about. By the time we finish, we need to know, the winners need to know, and their supporters need to know that they won, and the loser and the loser's supporters need to know that they lost. And all but the most disinformed of the wingnuts out there know, in fact, that Al Franken won that race, and that, again, is thanks in no small part to Mark Ritchie. So way to go, Minnesota, and get ready, because here we go again. All right, let me get to, do I have time, or do I got to go to a break? Yeah, I can go. Let me go real quick, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back for more. I want to get to Derek Brett. He's the managing attorney of the Brett Law Firm down there in Florida, as well as Susan Pinchon, the longtime election integrity advocate and expert from Florida Fair Election Coalition. She can also, by the way, be seen in HBO's Emmy-nominated 2006 landmark documentary, Hacking Democracy. Although, did I just hang up on one of them? I did. All right. Landmark documentary, Hacking Democracy. She will be joining us in a moment as soon as we get her back, but that's okay, because I wanted to go to Derek Brent first on this. Okay, this is an extraordinary case, Derek. You did what appears to me to be a hell of a good job in filing this lawsuit in Osceola County in a county commission, second district race between Armando Ramirez and John Quinones, and you filed on behalf of Ramirez, and there's sort of two different sections to this case that I want to talk about. One is problems, concerns with the voting machines. They use paper ballots down there. I think Diebold Ops can. Correct, Derek?
Yeah, that's correct. And Brad, I'm a long-time admirer. Thanks for inviting me on tonight.
You're very kind to say that. Thank you, sir. So we have the voting machine issues. We're going to talk with Susan about that in a second. But you had some extraordinary incidents of what appear to be very serious fraud, Derek. So welcome to the show, sir, and give us an idea of some of what we're looking at, and then we'll get into the specifics.
What we have is, on the provisional ballot level, we have two voters. We have provisional ballots for people who the supervisor of elections and their employees are uncertain as to whether or not they can actually cast a ballot, a regular ballot. We had two people who were misissued provisional ballots. It happens a lot, unfortunately. But they were misissued provisional ballots. The individuals have 72 hours to go into the supervisor of elections office after the fact to prove that their votes should actually be counted. These two individuals, after they cast their provisional ballots, were sitting at home the night after the election, and the opposing candidate, Mr. Quinones, who was eventually declared the victor, literally knocks on their door in the middle of the night and wants to talk to them about everything. They are freaked. They don't open their door, but Mr. Quinones, through the door, says they don't need to go into the supervisor of elections the next day, that everything has already been taken care of. They persist. They go in the next day. Supervisor of elections employee says, we know who you are. Don't worry. It's been taken care of. Your votes will be counted. 2 days later, November 5th, they find out their votes were never counted.
So they were told, so just to, that I get this straight, they have to vote provisionally for whatever reason, and they're supposed to go in and verify that they are who they say they are the next day. They're actually visited by one of the candidates at this house who says, don't worry about it, don't go in. They don't fall for that. They're freaked out. They don't fall for it. They go in anyway, and then someone at the election office in Osceola County says, oh, you don't worry about it. We got you covered. We know who you are. So they go away, and their votes are never counted after that.
That's correct. That's one story.
That's only one. And by the way, I failed in pointing out we're talking about a race where how many votes currently separate the winner from the loser?
50.
And how many votes would need to separate the winner from the loser to trigger a recount or a hand count?
Approximately 43 to 44. For an automatic recount, for a hand count, half that amount, so yeah. Approximately 21, 22.
Okay, so anywhere from 7 or 8 to 22 votes, if those changed, would change the course of this race to cause some sort of a hand count or automatic recount, so very few votes.
Sure.
All right, let me take a quick break here, and I want to come back, get some more examples of this fraud that you're talking about in this race, which is mind-blowing, and we're going to talk to Susan Pinchon as well about problems with the machines. I'm telling you, this case, this ought to be the end of paper ballot op scans if half of the stuff in this case is proven true. Brad, in for Mike Malloy, much more. Stay with us straight ahead.
You need
Welcome back to the Malloy Show. 22 minutes after the hour, Brad in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Derek Brett, attorney from Osceola County, Florida, and Susan Pinchon of Florida Fair Elections about this the second district race in the Osceola County Commission. They've just filed a lawsuit, Armando Ramirez has, against the county and his opponent, John Quinones, a race that they're separated by just 50 votes, and if it was, seven or eight less, there would be an automatic recount required, and there is some extraordinary evidence for fraud in this case. And well, before I get to the voting machines, let me make sure I got Susan. I haven't hung up on her this time. Hey, Susan, are you there?
Brad, hi, how are you?
There you go. All right, I'm good. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Susan. Great to talk to you again. I promise, well, I can't promise, but I'm going to try not to hang up on you again.
Okay.
It's the least I can do. But before I get to you and the machines, I want to get to back to Derek for a second to talk about more incidents, evidence of fraud here. We talked about Mr. and Mrs. Lee and what happened to them in the previous segment. Tell us about what happened with the Sextons, Mr. Brent.
Well, the Sextons had a different case, and this is a much more pervasive example. First, Brad, you really have to understand, once that election is certified, we have 10 days to file a lawsuit. So the grassroots activists that were working alongside Mr. Ramirez really did an incredible job to actually root out a lot of this evidence. But the Sextons are an example of people who actually never voted. And yet were alleged to have actually cast absentee ballots in the race that were counted, and we can only assume they were counted in a way which really wasn't for Mr. Ramirez.
So they never voted. They have testified to you that they never voted. They never asked for an absentee ballot, correct?
They never voted. They never asked for an absentee ballot. They weren't interested in voting in this election, and in fact, I believe Mr. Sexton was actually out of the country at the time.
Yeah, he was supposedly in the Philippines
for the
past 3 months.
That's correct.
So how do we know that they voted, or how do we know that the county believes that they voted?
Well, the county actually provides a list of voters who cast absentee ballots, and both of the Sextons are on that list. So, again,
and
this
if
is
I
not...
Could add,
yeah, go ahead, Susan.
And all seven voters in the Sextons precinct were shown, the vote was 7-0 in the absentees for Mr. Quinones. So they were obviously shown as voting for Mr. Quinones, and yet they never voted.
How about the other five who voted in that precinct for Mr. Quinones? Have you been able to check with them to see if they voted or if somebody voted for them?
Yeah, we have been able to do that. It's funny. We have one particular person who actually did vote and cast an absentee ballot. She cast it for Mr. Ramirez. Her mother, Ms. Garcia, had supposedly also cast an absentee ballot according to the Supervisor of Elections records. However, she never had cast an absentee ballot. She's actually been in Puerto Rico for the last 6 months, and we have a copy. I submitted a copy with the complaint. We have the actual sealed absentee ballot envelope that was mysteriously sent to Ms. Garcia's address where she lives with her daughter. The others all live within the same precinct and had all cast ballots for Mr. Ramirez. This precinct, precinct 134, had only, according to supervisor's records, cast two ballots for Mr. Ramirez. We've uncovered four voters who have cast ballots for Mr. Ramirez in 134, both Ms. Garcia's daughter, as well as three other residents who live in the same domicile, who are domiciled together,
right,
had all cast ballots. Apparently, at least two of those, if not more, were never counted for Mr. Ramirez. At least two of those, because of the supervisor's records that confirm these ballots were counted, were counted for his opponent, Mr. Quinones.
So some were cast and not counted, others were not cast, but they were counted, and in the case of Ms. Garcia, you've actually got record that she voted, but Ms. Garcia's daughter says Ms. Garcia was out of the country and actually has the ballot that was sent to their house still sealed in the envelope, right?
That is correct.
Seems like a cut and dry case of fraud to me. I don't know how anybody's going to explain this one. We've got to talk about this for a few more minutes after the break and about the machine problems they're having as well with Susan Pinchon of Florida Fair Elections Coalition and Derek Brent, the attorney who filed the case. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us.
I can't get no relief. Businessman there to drink my wine. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
We are gonna cut them down. Our friends at Diebold, they can keep running, but we will cut them down. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Glad you could join us here on Thanksgiving Eve. We will be opening up the phones to your calls on this topic or any other you'd like to talk about a little bit later this hour and the next. All next hour is wide open to you. 877-520-1150. We're finishing up here on this, what I think is an extraordinary lawsuit that I have at bradblog.com. If you come to the item for tonight's show, you can download this PDF, get all the details on it in Osceola, Florida, the Osceola County Commission, second district race between Armando Ramirez and John Quinones. 50 votes currently separate them, and Derek Brett is representing Mr. Ramirez, has filed a lawsuit on his behalf concerning sure as hell appears to be fraud in several cases. And Susan Pinchon has been working on this case as well. She's an election integrity advocate from Florida who joins us to talk about problems with the voting machine. So to quickly summarize, and I'll move here to Susan, but to quickly summarize, we're talking about ballots that were said to have been cast but were found to have never been counted, and some voters who said they didn't vote at all, but it turns out someone voted for them, and oddly enough, in at least one of those cases, a Miss Garcia, she actually still she was out of the country, she still has the sealed ballot, the absentee ballot at her house, and yet somehow the county shows that she voted for John Quinones, who only leads by 50 votes, and if it were a few less, there would be an automated recount. Okay, Susan Pinchon, with all of that fraud that's going on with these voters, what about the machines? At least they performed well. At least they counted ballots accurately. Did they not, Susan Pinchon?
Well, Brad, we hope to find that out, but I would like to say I loved your comments about Minnesota. And leading into the machines, I'd just like to say that in Florida, in 2005, they passed a law. It's against the law in Florida to hand count the paper ballots. And we have, unlike Minnesota, we have a problem here where the state will do just about anything to prevent being embarrassed or to prevent anybody's knowledge of problems with elections. So,
you mean you won't even get a hand count if the numbers turn out to be 10 votes separate? Won't you then get a hand count?
What they did in 2005 was change the definition of manual recount, and now we're only allowed to recount the undervotes and the overvotes, but never. It's actually against the law to count all the paper ballots. It's been requested by many candidates around the state, and the State Division of Elections says, no, you cannot do that.
It is illegal to actually examine and count a paper ballot in the state of Florida.
Isn't that just... I mean, now, we did get paper ballots in Florida in 2007.
Yeah,
but,
you did. And to Charlie Crist's credit there, but now that you got the paper ballots, wouldn't it be nice to count them like they get to do in Minnesota?
Yes, we're hoping for that one day. So, so we have just a little bit of everything in this Osceola election. We have military overseas ballots that weren't counted. We have people who were forced to vote by provisional ballot who should have been allowed to vote by regular ballot. And
now, were they legal, Susan, were they legal military ballots that were sent back in and arrived in time?
That is what we believe to be the case, and we believe that they were never counted.
Why were they not counted?
Well, we don't know the reason why yet, and that we hope that will come out, and you know, as this case progresses.
And how do you know that they were not counted?
Well, I think Derek might be able to answer that, but well, for one thing, the last records that they submitted to the state were the election was November 2nd, and the last records they submitted for absentee voting, those records were submitted on November 1st. So all the votes were not in at that point, and yet those were the last records that were part of the official record. And the military ballots are counted on election day and then 10 days following the election in Florida. So.
And the numbers never changed in those following 10 days?
That's correct.
All right. And, well, could it be that votes were cast by the military, but in this case there were just undervotes in this particular race, that they counted them for other elections on the same ballot?
Well, yes, that it could be possible, but we have a lot of odd situations. We have 86 people who are shown as having voted by absentee ballot, but they have no address on the records and no precinct number.
Okay.
Tell
me about the there was a there's a train coming by.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah.
They're coming to get you, Susan. That's the peace train. I'm pretty sure that's the
peace train.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Tell me about this. The machines, they had a very interesting way of dealing with the technical issue with the Diebold OpScan machines in this race,
yes,
did they not?
Yes, this was very high tech. Apparently, the ballots were jamming in some way, and they started shaking the machines. And then apparently, and I have this on video that I haven't seen yet, we're hoping we'll post this on Brad Blog because it's supposed to be amazing to watch. They just kept shaking the machines to the point that it was making a racket. Somebody said it sounded like, speaking of trains, like trains or trucks. And apparently there's over an hour of video of machines being forcefully shaken.
You have this video of shaking the machines?
Yes, yes.
Is this part of the process in Florida or just this county to this is how we repair the machines, the OpScan machines, we shake them? Derek, yeah.
They said that
go
that
ahead,
was
Derek.
Acceptable practice.
That was acceptable practice.
The manufacturer had told them that in order to make the machines work, you had to shake them vigorously and even bang them against the wall.
Now, which manufacturer, because we're talking about they were machines made by Diebold, but then they changed their name to Premier, and then they were sold, they were purchased by ES&S, but then they had to get rid of it because the Justice Department said it was antitrust, and so Dominion took over a lot of those contracts. So who the hell is the manufacturer at this point, and who gave them the instructions to bang the voting machines against the wall to make them work?
Well, I know here in Volusia County, our supervisor of elections also said that at one point, and that was Diebold. So I'm not sure who said it in this election. Do you know, Derek?
Actually, I have no idea at this point.
Unbelievable.
You know, I thought it might be ES&S, but it could have been Dominion.
And Derek, Brett, do we have any idea of there was a large number of undervotes that were not counted? That were counted. Nobody was counted at all by the optical scanners in this race. Do I remember this correctly?
That's correct. The supervisor of elections has stated that there were 304 undervotes. And as Susan has mentioned, those undervotes have not been the subject of any scrutiny yet. The only thing that they've done that's been done to them is they were fed into those machines, and they were spit back out as being undervotes. And that's all we have right now. Now, obviously, those 304 votes could sway not just the entire election, or at a minimum, you know, give us grounds for an automatic recount and hopefully eventually a hand recount of the undervotes.
So it is legal to count a vote like that, an undervote, to examine one of those by hand?
You can examine an undervote by hand and an overvote by hand. The overvotes, I believe, there were only two of those, have already been examined.
And Derek, Brett, what are you asking for in this lawsuit? What's the remedy you're asking for from the court?
the court primarily to void the election. In the alternative, we're asking them to take whatever measures are necessary, which could include anything from voiding the absentees alone, all the way to just simply declaring Mr. Ramirez the winner. Now, the natural result per Florida law, not just statutory law, but
yeah,
case law, would be to void the election and hold a new election.
Okay. Well, when will the county respond to this, and when will it be heard in a court of law, Derek?
Well, you know, the county has 20 days to answer.
Yeah.
However, we've filed discovery request already, and we filed a motion for expedited discovery. We attempted to get into the court over the last 2 days, and unfortunately, the judge took off today, and then yesterday, she had apparently called me and had to come in immediately without any notice. It was a voicemail message. I was meeting with clients and said, "Come in right now." And I'm not in Osceola County. I'm in Orange County. I'm in Orlando.
Okay.
So it would have taken me a good 45 minutes or so to shuffle down there. So it was unusual, but hopefully next week now we'll have an actual hearing before this judge.
Well, keep us up to date on this. It's certainly very interesting, and I would certainly I don't know how they can look at the evidence that you compiled, and I would urge people to check it out. Go over to bradblog.com, the item about tonight's show. The PDF is listed there. Read this case, and frankly, read on down. Go to page 14, I think it is, of this case to read about the Lees and the Sextons and the Garcias and the actual hard evidence they have. Before I run here, Susan Pinchon, who you, by the way, if you haven't seen Hacking Democracy, you can go to hackingdemocracy.com. You can actually see it in parts on Google and YouTube and so forth. And 9 of 9 is a part of Hacking Democracy. The very end of the thing, you can watch it at YouTube, where we actually see one of these op scan machines. I think it's the same type we're dealing with in this case, are we not, Susan?
Yes, exactly.
And it's a scene that you're in that's very moving, where we actually see the paper ballots run through this optical scan machine. We know what the results should be because it's a mock election. There's only 7 or 8 votes, and the results come out the exact opposite. And you were there that day, the first time this hack ever occurred, right?
Yes, that's correct, Brad. It was a really shocking experience.
At this point, given that, Susan, do you have any confidence in these machines anymore, really, at all? And if not, how the hell should we be counting our ballots?
Well, I really don't have any faith in the machines, Brad, because, you know, in addition to that, the central vote tabulator has a manual override that allows an election administrator to go in, highlight any candidate's total, delete it, and type in whatever they want. And that very well could have happened in this with these absentees. They just simply put in the number they wanted, which is why they desperately didn't want to recount and prevented Mr. Ramirez from getting votes he was entitled to that would have allowed him to have his recount. So what we should do, the only thing really, is to count paper ballots in the precincts on election night before they leave anybody's eyesight, and have the public there to witness and watch their votes being counted so that everybody knows what the totals actually are.
That sounds a whole lot like democracy to me. It'll be quite a while before that reaches Florida. Susan Pinchon of the Florida Fair Elections Coalition. You can check them out and support their efforts at floridafairelections.org. And Derek Brett of the Brett Law Firm, who's filing on behalf of Armando Ramirez. Derek, please do thank Mr. Ramirez for standing up and fighting to have ballots counted in these United States of America, instead of running away and saying, well, that's that. It really means a lot. And in a small election like this that is manageable, that we can fight for oversight, it really could make a lot of difference in what happens across the rest of the country. So, Derek, please do thank him for me. And I thank you, Derek, for helping him out and doing such a great job in filing this case.
I'll pass the word on. Thanks for everything, Brett.
Thank you, brother. And thank you, Susan. Do appreciate it. Good luck. Keep us up to date, will you?
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Brad.
You
take
bet.
Care.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
All right. We're coming back to your phone calls and much more. 877-520-1150. Did you hear the hammer came down in Texas? Yeah, Tom DeLay. He's going to jail. Or is he? Much more straight ahead, including your calls. Get in line now, 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us. The world at one, and I believe it could be. Someday it's going to come. But out on the edge of darkness. Welcome back to the Malloy Show. I, for one, am thankful for John Lennon as we head into this holiday break. Let's see. Oh, we'll have a best of Mike Malloy tomorrow night, so you can get your Malloy fix, wake you up right out of your trip to fan coma, no doubt. And then I shall return on Friday, post-tea giving, have much more. David Swanson is going to be joining us on Friday. And I'm going to try to get a whole bunch of your calls in, as I will now, 877-520-1150. If you would like to use your public airwaves to tell me what you are thankful about or about anything else, we're going to talk about Tom DeLay, of course, in the next hour. The big, big news coming up in hour number three. You do not want to miss it. Something to be thankful for. Something else to be thankful for while you guys line up. 877-520-1150. Speaking of lining up, this TSA stuff. You know, okay, so last year we have the Christmas bomber. And I didn't want to talk about it. I was on the air at the time, broadcasting from Dallas. And I didn't want to talk about it because it's a stupid story. Because it's just, you know, stupid. They arrested him. It didn't go off. They got him away. Enough. I'm not going to change my life. I'm not going to hide under the goddamn table every time someone lights a match. Okay? Land of the free, home of the brave. Which part of brave do you not get? Anyway, now we get to this year, and oh, we got to use these porno scanners. Porno scanners, enhanced pat-downs. I mean, what is this world coming to? Well, here's the good news, sort of. All of this brouhaha about the TSA and about these scanners and about these pat-downs, it's working as it's supposed to. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that, there's a problem with these scanners. There's a problem with the pat-downs. People are complaining about it. People are over-complaining about it. Sometimes they're under-complaining about it. But it's democracy. It's happening. There's going to be adjustments to the system. Perhaps they'll throw them out entirely. But the system of democracy is working. We are all able to talk about this story and find the, if you will, happy medium, or at least try to. But do you have any doubt at all? Any doubt at all, if there was a Republican sitting in the White House right now, I don't care who that Republican was, this system wouldn't be working. Why? Because, at least half of the U.S. would be out there telling us that, it's post-9/11. Post-9/11, it's a different world we live in. We have to give up our civil liberties in order to have our security. But no, that's not happening now. Why? Because there's a Democrat in the White House. And what do you know? This means that the Republicans are free to criticize the policies that, by the way, George Bush began to put in place before he even left office. You remember that time, don't you? Back when everyone was telling us that, we need to read your emails. We need to torture you. We have to. It's a post-9/11 world. Have you forgotten? Have you forgotten? Yeah, well, now that there's no Republican in office, it's okay. The Republicans are free to bitch and moan and complain and say how ridiculous this is because, by the way, it is ridiculous. And the folks on the left, the progressives, the Democrats, well, some of the Democrats, but the progressives who would speak out and fight for our civil liberties, they would do it no matter who's in office. But the Republicans, only when there's a Democrat in office. Fine, I'll take it, whatever, I gotta take what I can get, it's Thanksgiving. At least people are complaining, at least they're bitching and moaning, and we're finding out how to make this work. The system, for the moment, is working. I hope you understand what I mean. Your call straight ahead. Brad in for Malloy. Show Brad Friedman in. Keep it playing a little bit there, brother. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Yes, it is I, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell egg, says me. Sitting in for Mike, he'll be back in the form of a encore presentation tomorrow on Thanksgiving. Then I will be back on Friday. And then finally, he will be back in fine fettle, live and in the flesh, on Monday. That's right, Cyber Monday. But you'll have me for Black Friday. You'll have me and David Swanson, the author of the new book, War is a Lie. Ain't that provocative? Pardon my cold here tonight, still fighting this like crazy, but glad you can be with us, and we are opening up the phone lines to you this hour, 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves. Use them or lose them, because you know all the way it's going. You lost most of them anyway. 877-520-1150. You haven't lost them tonight, so get in line. You can also stop by bradblog.com, where there is a lively chat ongoing. Joy Santa Cruz is there. Pro Annie is there. For Earth. Liberal in SC1. Tim from L.A. Cosmic Michael. All, of course, being handled beautifully, moderated by the lovely Desi Doyen, who is also screening your calls tonight. All right, a couple of items here before we get to your calls, and you can call about anything you like, but I was going to talk about how, well, you know, what the hell anymore do we have to be thankful for? And you really got to reach. But I bet you guys have some ideas, so if you'd like to tell me what you're thankful for, I would love to hear it tonight at 877-520-1150. Here's something that I think we can all be thankful for as we head into the holiday weekend. A jury has convicted Tom DeLay, has convicted, found him guilty on all charges of money laundering and conspiracy. This just happened just before airtime tonight. DeLay was charged with money laundering and conspiracy to commit money laundering. He now faces a possible sentence. This is the former U.S. House Majority Leader. You remember him, the Hammer, the guy who gamed the system down in Texas in order to get a whole bunch of more Republican seats. Did whatever he had to do. The hell with the law. Who cares? It's Texas. Well, as it turns out, Texas actually has some laws, and one of them is about a century old, and it prohibits corporate contributions in state political races. But DeLay was accused of funneling $190,000 of corporate money through the RNC and then back to the seven GOP candidates for the Texas House. Illegal! And he is found guilty now on that by a jury, faces a possible sentence of, get ready, 5 to 99 years in one count and 2 to 20 years in the other. Now, folks say he ain't going to serve a day in jail. When I say folks, I mean people who have stopped by Brad Blog since the news broke. Our friend, the ever-cynical Steve Heller, who has good reason to be cynical, as do we all these days, he says, he'll find it unconstitutional, find some way to overturn this on appeal, and perhaps they will. But for now, for tonight, Tom DeLay the Hammer could be going to jail for life. 877-520-1150. And for that, by the way, I am very thankful. A couple of other items here I wanted to hit, and then I'll give you another, something else that I'm thankful for. Let's see, a couple of quick items here. You may have heard this one. U.S. and Afghan officials say a man they believe to have been a senior Taliban commander who was involved in high-level peace talks for months was actually an imposter. Yes, the man was apparently impersonating Mullah Akhtar Muhammad Mansour, a major Taliban figure, but it wasn't him at all. It's not him, said one Western diplomat. And, he adds, we gave him a lot of money. Brilliant! So they let this guy into high-level peace talks. And he was a Taliban guy, but it wasn't who he said he was at all. And, oh, we gave him a lot of money. Geniuses. All right, let's see. In letters sent earlier this week to the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve, GOP Rep Spencer Baucus and Judy Biggert of Illinois demanded an investigation into the establishment of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau created under Wall Street regulatory reform. By the way, I'm all up for investigation. I think investigation is great. Investigate everybody when there is evidence for reason to investigate people or things. In this case, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, headed up by, or at least being set up by, Elizabeth Warren, who is absolutely brilliant, and God love her in that role that she is carrying out right now. Anyway, they're going to be targeting her. What do you know? Why? Well, because she's effective. She must be done away with. Just ask Van Jones about that. The letters are reportedly the strongest signals yet that the new House GOP majority plans to use its oversight powers to hobble elements of the Obama agenda. Oh, really? Do you think? Who'd have thunk it? 877-520-1150. Let's grab Joy in Santa Cruz. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Joy.
Hello, Brad. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Joy?
I haven't talked to you in ages.
But when was last? Do I know you? Do I know which Joy?
Yeah, I've done interviews for you.
Oh, that Joy. Hey, Joy.
Hi.
Who knew? I can't know that every Joy is going to be you, you know.
Well, of course not.
Anyway, good to talk to you, Joy. So what's on your mind? You have something you're thankful for.
One, I'm thankful for you.
Well, you're kind. Thank you.
No, I'm serious. I'm really thankful for your green reports, for you and Dez.
Thank you.
You're doing a wonderful job. Oh. I'm just thrilled that you're doing this because we don't have any really good green reports.
And for folks who don't know, if you're on a progressive station that is not lucky enough to play the Green News Report, that's something that Desi and I do, a six-minute Green News Report that's kind of funny and kind of informative and hopefully not too crunchy. But you can listen to it if you like. If you don't get it on your fine broadcast station, you can listen to it at greennews.bradblog.com. So thank you, Joy. I appreciate you pointing that out.
Well, and there's a number of other things that I'm still thankful for. I'm thankful that we still have a Democrat as a president, even though I'm not really happy with him.
Because it could be worse? Is that what you're saying?
It could be a lot worse. We could have Sarah Palin.
Okay.
And I'm grateful that we have beautiful weather this weekend here in California.
Well,
perfect Thanksgiving weather.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Joy. Really good to talk to you. Good to hear from you. And much appreciate your kind words.
Have a great night, hon. And have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And you too. All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 877-520-1150. You can get in. You can tell me what you're thankful about for. You can tell me, but it doesn't have to be what you're thankful for. You can tell me what you're ticked off about. I don't care. These are your public airwaves. I am delighted to talk to you on them. Let's go to Christine in West Hollywood. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Christine.
Hi. Nice to talk to you, Brad. I'm wondering, I had a theory about these elections. We had all of those, we were listening to all of those and hearing all those results of those polls that were saying all these teabaggers were going to win and there was going to be a big upheaval and this and that,
right,
which I thought would be a self-fulfilling prophecy because they had all the machines fixed. Then we never heard any problems, very few, except for the few that you bring up.
Yeah.
But in the so-called mainstream corporate media, there was nothing.
Well,
why did they get rid of the exit polls?
Well, that's one of the reasons. Well, Christine, you didn't hear anything. Well, hang on. You didn't hear anything about problems back in 2004 when there was a mountain of problems, at least from the mainstream media.
That's true.
You know, so you don't hear about these things. One of the reasons why, if you go over to bradblog.com, I ran an election problem report wire of problems that were coming out from around the country, reports that were coming in. The 866 Our Vote hotline reported 15,000 calls to that hotline. And as a matter of fact, to give credit where it's due here, the New York Times themselves came out with a report that said, I can't remember the headline, I don't have it right in front of me, but it was something like major problems across the country on Election Day. Of course, those all disappeared shortly thereafter. But they were covering it. I think it was Ian Urbina over there, so I want to give him that credit. The problems are there, but, you know, when the candidates decide, oh, well, I guess I lost, I concede, I'm going away, we never hear about the problems, and it's left, you know, for another 2 years for people to start worrying about just, you know, hours before the election. Hey, are these machines working? Well, no, they don't. We told you that 2 years ago. You didn't do anything. So
that is really pathetic.
On the exit polls, yeah, they've gone out of their way to lock those down. We don't have them in many cases, or most disturbingly, they simply do not, will not, shall not release the raw data. What they release are the exit polls that have been adjusted after the election to meet what the results are, you know, the results of the actual ballots that are supposedly counted. They actually adjust the results of the exit polls to match up with the results of the elections. And the only way to get around that is to see the raw data, and they won't release that for some reason.
I'm stunned, but I'm not really. On the other hand,
yeah,
you know, I just see where the direction this country is going, and I'm so sad.
Don't be sad. Don't retreat. Reload, Christine. I appreciate your call.
Okay, thank you.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
And you too.
Thank you, dear.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye bye. More of your calls straight ahead. 877-520-1150. Would love to hear what's on your mind, thankful or otherwise. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com, thankfully, sitting in for Mike. More ahead. I am thankful for our engineer out here at KTalk AM 1150, our engineer Tony Sorrentino, who knows how to rock da bumper music. Man, that's good stuff, brother. Thank you. Brad Friedman in for Mike. We will be taking your calls here momentarily. More of your calls, 877-520-1150. Wanted to keep things wide open as I could here to try to hear from as many of you as possible on the air. Not just over at the chat room at bradblog.com, where you can go visit and say hello to everybody and they're lively. There's a lot of cooking going on there. The smells of Thanksgiving are wafting into the chat room. I think that's the smells of Thanksgiving. I'm not sure. I hope it is. In any case, let's see here. WikiLeaks is set to report WikiLeaks reports that its next release of secret documents, its next release of secret documents will be seven times larger than the Iraq war logs. Yesterday on Twitter, or earlier this week, actually, I think the day before yesterday, the site said that there has been intense pressure over it for months, but later said the coming months will see a new world where global history is redefined. Well, I hope they're not understating it there. So that's what we can look forward to from WikiLeaks in the coming months. Seven times larger. And that Iraq war logs release was something like, what was it, Tony? You remember that 90,000 documents or 900,000 pages? I'm insane. Yeah. All right, 877-520-1150. Do I have time? Yeah, let me see if I can get to Tom in Bullhead City, Arizona. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Tom.
Yeah, a stopped clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm having to agree with the conservatives on the TSA thing.
The who? The conservatives or the Republicans?
The conservative teabagger Republicans are talking about an invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
Well, God bless them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've taken 14 flights in the last 14 months, and I have been searched 11 times. Intensively.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm a long haired, 6'1", 650 pound, you know, hippie. That's 56 years old.
Dirty hippie. You deserve to be searched like that, sir.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And my wife is laughing at me the whole time. She's Chinese. She's a little petite, you know, perfect looking, you know, beautiful woman. And no, they never search her.
She doesn't get searched. But you do because you're a dirty hippie.
Yeah. And the only time I wasn't searched was when we were in China.
Right. And in that case, she was searched?
What's that?
And in that case, she was searched?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Isn't that funny?
Okay.
And I was carrying medical-grade marijuana, so I was really nervous about it. And, you know, so anyway.
So do you agree that you should that they should be carrying off these searches?
No, please. I'm really, you know, Benjamin Franklin said that anybody who would give up their Fourth Amendment, you know, basically about the Fourth Amendment right.
Yeah, give up their liberty for security deserves neither liberty nor security.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Tom, I got to get to a break. Have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend. I appreciate it, and thanks for the call. 877-520-1150. What are you thankful for? What are you not thankful for? Would love to hear from you. The phones are, a few lines are open. Straight ahead. Brad in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
One hand is tied to the tightrope walker. The other is in his pants. And the
an old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw bowing through the cloudy sky and up a cloudy draw.
Welcome back, America.
Their brands are still on.
Glad to have you with us for this final hour tonight. 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. Keeping you warm tonight, and hope you got great plans for Thanksgiving tomorrow. Me, I'm probably going to sleep all damn day. I haven't had a day off since everybody else. The election ended on November 2nd. For me, not so much. It's still going on. All right, let's get back to your calls here. Curtis in Allentown, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Actually, it's not Mike.
It's not Mike. It's Brad.
It's okay. Brad, yeah. How are you, Curtis? What's up?
I'm doing good. I'm a trucker, so I have a lot of time. I listen on XM. I listen to Patriot Channel and America Left probably equal amounts of time.
Isn't that, don't you think, isn't that obnoxious that one is called Patriot Channel and the other one is called American Left?
I normally just look at the numbers, but yeah, you're right.
I mean, but, so, you know, they need to change it. Maybe one's the Patriot Channel, the other is the American Channel. Anyway, yeah. So what? Yeah. So you're listening on the road, XM. Very good. What's up?
Yeah, like I said, I listen to both probably equally, trying to form, you know, my political opinions. And the best I could come up with is maybe I'm a moderate. But my frustration is, and it, maybe I'm just not listening correctly or at the right times, but it seems like more on the Patriot Channel when the hosts are talking about a particular subject, they speak more to their principles and ideas and how they got to there.
Yeah.
And I listen for that, you know, for, on the America Left channel.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's just more insulting the teabaggers and Republicans and not so much about why, because that's what I don't get.
Okay, well, that's a little bit broad for me to handle in one fell swoop, but I will say this, that and for people who don't know, the Patriot Channel is the right-wing channel, and the American Left is the left-wing channel, supposedly, or I like to say the non-right-wing channel, because a lot of people on it aren't particularly left-wing. There isn't much of a left-wing in this country. The problem that I have, Curtis, with so many of the folks, and like I say, I don't mean to be general, but with so many of the folks in the right-wing media, is that, frankly, they make stuff up. They lie. They don't tell the truth. And whether they believe it passionately or not, they make stuff up. So that's a problem. And there's, you know, plenty of folks on the left who I'm also happy to beat up on the supposed left. But hopefully they're telling the truth. So without being able to get a specific idea of an issue or a person or something that you're talking about, Curtis, it's hard to respond to your thought.
I'll throw just one little thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to get a grip on the whole healthcare situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been very fortunate. I've always been able to afford healthcare, and I have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem with helping others. I just don't get the whole healthcare is a right thing.
Well, okay. Well, I can speak to that, and then I got to let you go only because I want to get to a bunch of callers. But you would understand that healthcare is a right if you had some healthcare that you needed and you couldn't afford it. And, you know, because you can afford it, or because somebody who's rich, let's say the lady who lives to the right of me gets breast cancer, and she's rich and she can afford to treat it. My wife gets breast cancer and she must die. Now, you're cool with that, right? Because my wife just doesn't have the money.
I don't want her to die.
Well,
no, I don't want anyone to die.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, I have no problem with helping with all that. And, you know, I just don't see it as a fundamental right.
Well,
I mean, to me, it seems like, you know, you have the right to pursue that and the ability to purchase health care.
And you have a right then to die if you can't afford
it.
You have a right to die then if you can't afford it, right? That's just tough luck.
Well, if you get hit by lightning, it doesn't matter if you have money or not.
Well, that's right, and because stuff happens. But if you get hit by lightning, you should be able to be treated for that, whether you happen to be a corporate CEO or whether you happen to have been laid off by a corporate CEO, have lost your health insurance, and can't afford treatment. Doesn't that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Because, you know, in the end, I would suggest that the privatized healthcare system and the fact that people are out there making a profit on your health or, frankly, on your death is rather obscene. And if you go anywhere else in the world, they laugh at us here in this country that, you know, you can't, that if you get sick and you can't get treatment because you can't afford it. It's crazy. And if you're listening to Democrats talking about it, it's no surprise that you think they, you know, don't really speak from their heart, that they don't understand what they're talking about, because so many Democratic officials, they don't. They're cowards. They're cowardly. And, you know, please don't judge progressives and progressive ideals by lousy Democratic officials and, for that matter, even bad talk show hosts on the radio, okay?
Okay, well, I guess what
yeah,
that the only thing that really strikes me on their side of it is when they speak about government doing something better than the private sector?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there some way that, you know, I would be glad to write a check, you know, to an insurance company to help out with other people's health care instead of giving it to the government, because it seems like the government doesn't do anything officially.
Well, you know what? Talk to somebody who's in. You weren't ever in the military, were you?
Yes, I was. I was in the Air Force.
You were. So, do you use the VA?
No, that was a long time ago.
Well, but you're still entitled to VA coverage, aren't you?
I don't know.
Veterans Administration.
I have Blue Cross Blue Shield and have for 25 years.
Okay, well, you're probably wasting a lot of money there because I think you're entitled to service.
I'll pay for it.
Well,
I'll pay for it. I get through my job.
You don't?
No.
Oh, well,
I get through my job.
Okay, well, if you lose that,
I'm a little bit outside.
All right. If you lose that, or if you lose your job, you're going to be damned happy that you can go to the VA and that you can be treated, even if you don't have money. You have the right to be treated. And to have health care at the government run. And by the way, if you talk to any Republicans, they'll tell you, no, we don't want to close down the VA. The VA is the best with our military. They deserve the best. Well, they do deserve the best. And the best, as defined by Republicans, even guys like Bill Kristol, have said that the best is the VA. And that's what? Actual socialist government-run health care. Think about that while you're driving tonight, Curtis. I really enjoyed talking to you, but I do got to run to get to more callers. But I really appreciate your call, and please touch base again at another time. I'll be back on Friday or any time I'm in. All right, brother?
Okay, thanks, Brad. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thanks, and you too. All right. Let me see if I can get in some more good for old Curtis. Thanks for calling in and giving a damn enough to ask questions. And wish there was more of you out there, Curtis. And by the way, don't be fooled by those liars on the right, because they just lie. It's one thing, you know. It's one thing if you have disagreements about policy, that's fine. But there are no death panels in the health care bill that was put forward by Democrats. That was a lie. The death panels are in the private insurance companies who decide that, you know what, we're not going to pay for it. Sorry, you're going to have to die. Or you're too sick, we're going to withdraw our coverage. That's where the death panels are. And so, you know, just anyway, thanks for giving the damn, Curtis. I really do appreciate it. Linear Bob,
yes,
in San Jose, California.
Yes.
Welcome to the Molloy Show,
yeah,
sir.
We've traded emails off and on, Brad.
Yeah, your name looks familiar.
That's why.
All right.
Terrible. Anyway, I'm thankful for you and for Mike and for the other folks on. We still have liberal talk radio. I was beginning to think it might not survive not too long ago.
Well, it's boy,
and
good.
It's still kind of bleak, but
yeah,
you know, you guys are still hanging in there, and you know, and I, and without talk radio, and especially, you know, I would say loyal and patriotic talk radio,
yeah,
which is what I consider where we are to be.
Which is why it ticks me off when
I'd be going nuts.
Which is why it ticks me off when I hear about XM and the right wing channels, the Patriots.
Because I listen to those guys once in a while. I mean, out San Francisco, we've got some of the classics. We've got Michael Savage out here.
Yeah, crazy people.
And
crazy.
About 5 minutes a month does me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about all I could take. But I appreciate you're taking the time, and you do it. You know, you do this great little 5 minute news thing twice a week with your wife, and she's great too. I enjoy it. And I listen to you guys streaming and stuff. And God, I don't know where I'd be without it.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that, Bob. But where do you listen? You're out in San Jose. What station
are
you listening
to? Okay, it's KKGM, Green 960, and then I also use the internet.
Oh.
So there are times when I want to hear something that isn't on.
Yep.
Like tonight, earlier tonight, there was a basketball game.
What?
I don't mind basketball.
What? On the Green 960, on the great Green 960,
they
preempted the Mike Molloy Show
tonight. Just recently.
That's a fine. How do you do? Hey, thanks.
But I will say, as a broadcaster, I'm a broadcast engineer. I intimidate transmitters, especially television transmitters. I get paid to make 50,000 watts still work.
Yep.
So when people turn on their TV set, there's a picture there, or they can turn on the radio, there's a radio signal there, and they don't have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you and I may be a dying breed in that regard.
Well, yeah, that's those socialist radio waves.
Yeah, socialist radio.
Thank God for them. That's all I can tell you. And I wish that progressives would step up. Frankly, I wish that Democrats would step up and take back those public airwaves.
Well, I'll tell
but
you,
don't
I
get me started.
What I can to support it. And I,
thank
and,
you, brother.
And I think you guys are. In fact, I know you are, and I know Mike is. And I say the best I can say is thank you for everybody hanging in there.
Appreciate it. We're gonna hang in there. We're gonna do more than that. We're gonna fight, and we're gonna keep fighting and to take back what's ours, the people's. Thanks, Bob. I do appreciate the call. Have a great Thanksgiving. Okay.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. Let me get to 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. You can still get in before we disappear for the Thanksgiving break, but never fear. We'll be back Friday, whether you like it or not. 877-520-1150. We're going to try to get to everybody out there. Sharon in Claremont, Stephen in Burr. Oh, see, all the people are up late out in California now. Now we're hearing from all the West Coasties. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. One more segment. Glad you can be with us.
Makes you small, and the ones that mother gives you. Look down.
Tony Sorrentino here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Thank you, sir. You rock as ever. Also to producer Desi Doyen, producer, screener, and chat room hostess babe. Thank you, Des. And I'm also thankful that Jeannie Dean, everyone's favorite chat room hostess babe, has shown up over at the bradblog.com chat room. Good to see you, JD. Hope you're well. Let's see, who else do I need to thank? I need to thank Derek Brett and Susan Pinchon for joining me tonight, as well as thank Andy Worthington across the pond for staying up late to join our show. And, of course, I thank all of you for listening. 877-520-1150. I'll grab a couple more of your calls here, but I wanted to, point out... Desi had mentioned to me during the break there about that call from Curtis, and it really was good to hear from Curtis, who had mentioned that he hears insults of folks on the right, teabag this, teabag that. That's true. Two points to mention here. One, the Tea Partiers called themselves teabaggers originally. There's a sign you can look at, I think it was April 2009 or February 2009. Teabag the liberal Democrats before they teabag you. So that was their own name. But you're right, it is used as an insult, and I will keep using it as an insult until I hear the Republicans stop referring to the Democrat Party. It is the Democratic Party. And Curtis, when you hear the folks over on that so-called Patriot station, when you hear them talk about the Democrat Party, that's the same thing as calling the Tea Partiers teabaggers. Okay? All right. On Friday, we're also going to talk about the fact that the majority of Americans want Congress to keep the new health care law or actually expand it, despite Republican claims that they have a mandate from the people to kill it. New poll says they don't. We're going to talk about that on Friday. Okay, let me fly through these calls. Sharon in Claremont, California.
Oh,
welcome.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Sharon.
And it's great to hear you, and thanks for all the great things you do. And I'm going to begin with a rather crude joke.
Uh-oh. Get your finger on that dump button there, Tony.
No. Okay. I'm not using any foul language.
Okay. Right.
I'm just going to repeat what Rush Limbaugh said today.
Yeah.
He doesn't want anybody to take their tea bags to the airport.
Yeah, something like that. He said, they're bringing their feeling their tea bags or something like that. Yeah. Well,
okay.
Apparently that's okay because Rush said it, so that's fine. Yeah.
That's okay. Anyway,
yeah.
I'll get on to the more serious things. I can appreciate what Curtis said because while he's listening to the lies on one hand and what he thinks is the facts on the other, but they are opinionated, then he does get confused. But what most Americans need to know is that the first things fascists do are they take over the airwaves. That is why it's extremely important that the Dems should have, when they took over in 2006, grabbed control of the FCC, which they still have control of, and deregulate it.
Well, the FCC,
the
FCC is actually part of the executive branch, so it's controlled by the White House. So it wasn't until 2008 that they arguably had control, if you will, over the FCC. And you don't mean divest the FCC; you mean divest the big corporate behemoths that have taken over the airwaves, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm saying
I'm
that
you.
If the right now,
yep.
since the White House has the majority on the FCC,
yep.
and they're supposed to be a committee in the House
yep.
when they had the control that could have recommended to the FCC they deregulate.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last night. You can check the archives at bradblog.com. You're damn right. They should have. They still should. Thanks, Sharon.
They're going to continue to lose. And I'm going to say one more thing and get off the air. They should also have outlawed the unverifiable voting machines.
You got that right. Thank you, Sharon. I got to run. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You.
All right?
Bye.
Bye. Now I completely lost my train of thought. So I'm just going to go to Stephen Burbank very quickly. I've only got about 15 seconds, Stephen. Sorry about that. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brad. I'm glad for Bob because he said what I was going to say. I'm thankful for you and Mike Malloy and the other callers, Sanchez and Tim from L.A. And wit and wisdom, hopefully, if it ever comes to pass, that if I go to an airport, I have bypassed the radiation. And just when I have to go through the pat-down, I'll say, will you still love me and respect me in the morning?
Thank you for your call, Stephen. I appreciate your kind words. All right. Have a great night and a great great holiday. All right. Thank you all really very much. Oh, too much thanks. Well, we got to. It's Thanksgiving, so we're going to be off tomorrow. You'll hear a spectacular Malloy rebroadcast, and then we will begin broadcasting again Friday night on the same Brad time, same Brad channel, and Mike Malloy will return on Monday. Can't believe I forgot my point. Well, you know what? That's what happens when you bring out these amateur bloggers to take a professional radio job. What do you expect? All right, we'll see you on Friday. Thanks for everything, guys. Really, I am thankful for you. Until Friday, I'll see you at the blog. Keep it lit, America.